Wow.
What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Check engine light on? Take the guesswork out of your check engine light with O'Reilly Veriscan. It's free and provides a report with solutions based on over 650 million vehicle scans verified by ASE-certified master technicians. And if you need help, we can recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Bedrosian throws to Sandberg, and the pitch is grounded to second base. Thompson has it, throws to first. It's over! 27 years of waiting have come to an end. The Giants have won the pennant.
Welcome back to Thompson to Clark. And Brad, I know that spring, technically, start in about a month. I think March 20th is the official date that spring starts. But in baseball terms, it's mid-February. And according to the late, great Biz Markie, it's spring again.
That's right.
What's even wilder is there's going to be games on Saturday.
I know, man. Speaking of Biz Markie, I don't know why Pickin' Boogers keeps coming up on my... Anytime I shuffle classic hip-hop, Pickin' Boogers, I swear, comes up like once a day. But anyways, yeah, we are in the throes of spring. This is officially spring. I don't care what the calendar says, man. Ever since we were kids, this is spring. When you start getting articles in the paper, I didn't have ESPN growing up. I didn't have cable growing up. So when I started getting articles in the San Jose Mercury News and talked about who's showing up at camp, who's ready, who looks good, you know, all that stuff, that it is officially spring. We are here and we are ready, man.
We are ready. You know, the funniest thing is I was with both of my boys this weekend because we were in San Francisco for all the NBA All-Star Weekend stuff. And JJ kept going like, I'm so ready for baseball. Like, you know, I'm so excited for baseball. And I said, well, yeah, because it's spring training and everyone's record is 0-0. And then the regular season starts and then you start getting mad because the Giants are 500 and win one, lose one, win one, lose one. So, but it's the like everybody should be excited right now because they haven't actually played games and there's all kinds of discussion. And this one will make you feel a certain way. So Bryce Eldridge, you talked about who's coming into camp. Bryce Eldridge is basically going to be getting a master's class in how to play first base because he's not a natural first baseman. And he said that his dad and his dad's friends are so jealous because Will Clark is kind of his first person. Yeah, it's his first trainer for first base. But then as camp goes deeper, it's going to be JT Snow. So he's going to get two masters to help him figure out first base.
Well, yeah, I mean, you can't learn everything from a three-toed sloth, right?
Exactly.
Oh, Canseco. Yeah, I mean, that's awesome to have Will Clark, to have JT Snow. And then also, I mean, when you're just talking defense in general and footwork, you can go over and talk to Chapman too. And just, talk about some different things when it comes to defense. So, you know, he's got all those guys at his disposal, which is really, really awesome. And I really do love, you and I have been diving into, you know, articles on the San Francisco Chronicle because we've got Apple News Plus. We've been diving into the Athletic because we also have that. I don't know about you, man. I don't know about everybody else who's been reading this stuff, but I'm excited for the new brand of baseball this year that we might be getting because it's our brand of baseball, and I'm sure we'll get into that later. But I mean, this, you know, I'm pretty excited about defense and, you know, speed. We didn't add a ton of speed, but smart base running and you know, great pitching and situational pitching and deeper in ball games and stuff like that. So I've bought in. I've 100% bought in. I'm ready to go. So.
It's going to be, I hate to say, like, it's the most interesting spring the Giants, because we've been super intrigued in every spring training. Like, you know, going back to when we were kids and having hope, you know, the 1984 Giants or I think it was 84 Giants. They win like the most games in spring training, and then they go and lose like 90 games in the regular season. And you're like, oh, okay, spring training, probably the wins and losses probably don't mean that much.
Yeah.
But when it comes to a team that is in search of a new identity, spring training probably does mean a little bit more this year than it did last year, because basically Buster Posey and Bob Melvin are saying we don't have an identity, which means the prior organization of Farhan and others, Gabe Kapler, their identity wasn't necessarily Giants brand of baseball, World Series teams brand of baseball. How did those guys win? No, we're sort of following a lot of the trends by these other teams, and where sort of baseball's going. You know, you don't blame Farhan for following those trends. That's the models that he sort of, you know, was brought in to continue.
Yeah, Giants hired him to do that. They specifically hired him to do that. So
yeah, and so this year it's like, okay, so that didn't work. It worked one year, and the other years it did not. So now where do we go? And I think a lot of the baseball experts, your writers and such, they're probably looking at the Giants this year as a little bit of an experiment, because the Giants are zagging so hard compared to where baseball is going. Like, Buster Posey just came out the other day and said, you know, we're going to do something a little different with the arms. Like, we're going to try and get our minor leaguers to go deeper into games. And my first thought was like, heck yeah. But then my second immediate thought was like, wait, like, these pitchers have been brought up in a specific way so far, and now we're adjusting that. I hope they take it slowly or have a good plan or whatever, because then you're going to be burning out shoulders by mid-May, because these people are throwing twice as many innings as they realize that they were. So there's going to be adjustment. And I think, you know, as I read these spring articles, the one thing that comes back to me is, when you do a weekly podcast, you're reacting to a lot of things. And I'm not saying that we're going to stop reacting, because, you know, we're Giants fans, but we hold the team in high regard. If they're not doing things, we're not going to go, oh, you know, they're doing the best they can, and even though they're losing all these, like, no, we're going to go, okay, this is why, at least this is why we think we've been, you know, we've been watching the team. Here are some of the things that we've learned, and we're going to have those discussions. But at the same time, this might be a grace period year for the Giants, because there's so much change in what they've been doing since 2018. And when you do that, now there may be some really big pluses to that, because there may be an influx of firepower and happy players and all, and sometimes that can take you places. But I also, when you change process and you go from one specific process to this new process, which is really an old process, like, the players have to adjust, and the way that they've can't come up in baseball through the minors has to adjust. Their expectations has to adjust. Oh, I'm a left-handed hitter, and I'm actually facing this left-handed pitcher. I haven't done that in 3 years, and now you're asking me to go up against Chris Sale, and I'm going to take three down the middle because I've never seen this arm angle before in 3 years. Like, that's an adjustment too. And so I think we're going to have to give them some grace while at the same time trying to uphold, you know, what we like to do on this podcast at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it is going to be an adjustment. It's going to be, I don't know. I mean, I don't know what to expect, because we haven't, you know, been given this type of baseball in San Francisco for years. You know, smaller teams are trying to do that. The Marlins, Pirates, teams like that. You know, sure, they've got some power hitters, but they try to play station-to-station baseball. They try to have great pitching, good bullpen, good defense. And because that's the way you have to win, I think the Giants are forced into having to win that way now going forward. A little bit of forced and a little bit of, you know, the transition, because Buster Posey has been there. He's done that. He's done that three times, you know, to the top of the hill. So I think he sees, look, you know, we have a place in baseball right now to do this. And us as fans, we have to look at it and say, do we? I mean, is there a place for this type of baseball in 2025? I sure hope so, because again, the ballpark behind me in this picture, that is, you've got to play to that ballpark's strengths. That's like having a 10th player on the field. So if you can pitch well, keep the ball in the ballpark and play good defense, you can limit the damage on the other side of the field and the other dugout. And, you know, when they're at the plate, you can limit that damage. Giants have to score runs. They've put together a fairly decent lineup. I mean, I was kind of, over the weekend, I was just kind of, you know, reading some articles, and over the last week when we were off, I was reading some articles and just kind of taking a stab at things and taking a look. And when you look at the lineup, I mean, it's the possibility of you've got, you know, again, these are all possibilities, and these are all gleaning from articles that, mm-hmm. that I had looked at over the, you know, last couple of days. But, you know, there's talk of left-handed Lamont Wade Jr. leading off, mm-hmm. right? He had that 470 on base percentage before he got hurt last year. Willie Adames possibly batting second, right-hander. And then you've got left-handed Jung-Hoo Lee. And then you've got right-handed Matt Chapman. Then you've got right-handed Elliot Ramos, and then you go down the line from there. It's kind of, you know, mix and match as you go. So it's, I mean, that sounds old school too. Left, right, left, right, left, right. And that tells me too, that you're also looking at whatever pitcher you throw out there, left-hander or right-hander, we're going to throw out a consistent lineup that says, I think we can do damage against almost any pitcher with a consistent lineup. Especially if you're then getting into bullpen matchups and then getting into, you know, eighth and ninth inning, if you're within a run, can your offense then scrap out a run? Because that's the type of baseball that the Giants and Buster Posey and Bob Melvin are talking about, that this Giants team is going to have an identity going forward. And that is to play good baseball and station to station baseball and drive in runs and play good defense. So, I don't know, man. I buy into stuff pretty easily when my teams talk about it, but I like this brand of baseball. Mm-hmm. I don't like no offense, you know, to Jock Peterson, but I don't like the Jock Peterson type of baseball. It doesn't do a whole lot for me. He hits the crap out of the ball, but if he hits a sharp single to right field, he's going to be going station to station. There's not much you can do in that situation. And then especially if he comes up against a lefty, you're not going to see him. He's going to be pulled. So I want to go back to old school baseball. I want to go back to, you know, having a consistent lineup, guys that I can see hit four times in a baseball game, instead of, you know, the platoon and, you know, hockey line changes that we saw the last couple of years. And again, not knocking it. It was good for what it was, but, I'm certainly one who's ready for a change.
You know, you mentioned Jung-Hoo Lee batting third,
right?
And you know, the major flaw in his game is simply that he doesn't hit for power.
Correct.
So I'm wondering, like, I would love to hear Bob Melvin explain that a little bit more, like why he believes Jung-Hoo Lee could be a good third hitter versus having him lead off.
I think a little bit has to do with the way baseball has changed. And when you look around at lineups, your number one and your number two hitters are your best hitters. You want those guys to hit the most. Your number three guy is your next, your third best hitter. So if you're batting you know, Lamont Wade Jr. to get on base first, and then you've got Willie Adames coming up behind him who can do some damage. And then you've got Jung Hoo Lee could just drive in some runs, get a hit. You're looking at, I mean, possibly scoring one to two runs early in a ball game, and then all of a sudden putting pressure on a pitcher. So I kind of see that. I don't know if I'd want to go. And again, I think it's a left-right, and that's why you don't want to see Lamont Wade Jr. lead off and then Jung Hoo Lee and then go Willie Adames. Because then you're stuck left, right.
You know, my other thing about this is Lamont Wade is not fast. So
no, not at all, especially with all the leg issues he's got. So he's not your typical, but Kyle Schwarber leads off.
Sure.
But he also hits bombs. It's 40 home runs a game. But if, I mean, you're just talking about just getting a guy on base, you know, putting pressure on the pitcher in the first inning. Then the next time he comes around in the third or fourth inning, putting pressure on that pitcher again. So you're getting your one of your hitters who can get on base at a 400 clip. You're getting a guy like that to face a starting pitcher twice, because most starting pitchers are gone after five. So if you can get him to face that pitcher twice early on, then I think that's a good thing. But yeah, I mean, there's going to be so much experimentation during the spring. We may see Jung Hoo leading off. We may see Jung Hoo batting fifth. I don't know. I mean, there's going to be so much movement in the lineup and so much experimentation. So,
and then, you know, this will play early though, because push comes to shove, you got a nasty lefty, and does Lamont play, or
right,
do they bring in Wilmer? And then if you bring in Wilmer, he's probably got to hit, I don't know, just because of the lack of speed, I would hate to put him second or third.
Right.
And so then you're kind of throwing that new lineup kind of out of, it'll be funky, you know, when they do. And so this is all stuff that they're going to work on.
Yeah, you know? It's... There, you know, the nice thing about it is there's flexibility. You know, there's different things you can do. You're going to face more right-handers than you're going to face left-handers starting pitching wise. So you're going to see Lamont Wade Jr. quite a bit. And you won't, I mean, the Giants still don't have a DH. So you're going to see Wilmer at DH.
That was something that Melvin said. He's like, I don't have a firm grip on that one.
Yeah, Herrera and Encarnacion, who hits the crap out of the ball, that could be a fantastic DH, but he's also a right-handed hitter. So you're looking, I mean, you've got a lot of guys. I mean, I was also kind of playing with who's going to play where. Type mm-hmm. of thing. We're baseball nerds. We do this, right? Because mm-hmm. a catcher, you got Bailey, who's a switch hitter. You got Tom Murphy, who's a right-hander. First base, you got Lamont Wade Jr. and Wilmer Flores, lefty-righty. Fitzgerald at second, right-hander. Adames at short, right-hander. Chapman, right-hander, at third. You got left field. You got Ramos, who's a right-hander. You got Lee, who's a left-hander. You got Riaz in right field, left-hander. Then you got Gerard Encarnacion, who's a right-hander, who can play the outfield. They've talked about Lamont Wade Jr. possibly playing the outfield. We have so many outfielders, so many different outfield options. I don't know if they're going to want to go that route. And then at DH, you got Wilmer, Encarnacion, Lamont Wade Jr. And that's not, you know, that's not even taken into consideration, you know, some other guys, Brett Wisely, who, you know, be another infielder for the Giants. So, I mean, there's a lot of storylines in the spring. I think that's why we're so much looking forward to this spring, because there are so many storylines.
Do we see less switch hitters today than we did when we were younger?
I think so. Yeah, I think we do. And it's probably, I hate to say it, but it's probably because of money. I mean, if you got a kid growing up who's, you know, mashes left-handed pitching as a right-hander and also mashes as a right-hander, but just, you know, punching Judy as a left-hander, but he gets on base, you're probably going to have him exclusively bat right-handed.
Yeah.
I think back in the day, there were more opportunities for switch hitters. You know, and also back in the day too, you didn't have the three batter rule where a pitcher had to pitch to three batters. So, you know, if you were a switch hitter, if you had a lineup with three switch hitters, like the Cardinals used to have, like three or four switch hitters, you had to just throw your best pitcher out there and you know, hope that he can get those guys out. So,
all right, we're going to do an exercise here. And we're going to talk about the folks that we are paying the most attention to this spring training. Look, Adamas could hit 110 with zero home runs in spring training, and I'm not worried about him.
Yeah.
Matt Chapman could make five errors in the spring, and who cares? He's going to be fine in opening day. I don't worry about him. Logan Webb. Logan Webb could just be giving up, you know, hit after hit after hit. And like, dude's going to be fine. Come over.
He did that one spring, as a matter of fact. And we were like, what the hell's going on, man?
I feel like that's more often than not for him in the spring.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. It takes him a while to get that changeup going.
So we're going to earmark a few players that we're paying a little close attention to and why. And I wanted to start with this because the first person is someone that you mentioned, which is Jung-Hoo Lee. Not that the spring is necessarily super important for him. He's going to be the starting center fielder. Mm-hmm. He's got to be hit at the top of the lineup. The thing that I want to see is he did not show much ability to steal a bag. I think his first game, like, he literally got picked off.
He did.
In spring training. And, you know, this is something that Bob Melvin has talked about a lot, which is to be cleaner on the bases. Now, that being cleaner to me means not giving up outs on the bases.
Right.
They are going to have to figure out how to take advantage of the bigger bases when it comes to stealing bases and maybe taking an extra base. But also they need to make sure that they're not just creating tons of outs on the bases. And I do wonder if there is pressure on Lee to steal more bases and if that is something that he's even thinking about. Because I think of, like, man, I don't want to see this dude slide head first one time. Like, his shoulder stuff is real. You know, he went up against the wall to make a catch and his shoulder got jacked up. So to that level, like, that worries me a little bit. But also, you know, I'm just interested in, Is his game going to play at a faster level? And is this why Melvin doesn't really worry about hitting him leadoff? Because maybe the idea is, like, maybe we don't want to push him running as much because we need him to be healthy. And thus, you know, Wade just gets on base more. So we're playing the averages there.
Yeah, those are all good points. I think everything we've read so far and everything we've seen so far is that there are zero limitations.
He said himself.
Yeah, he said, I don't want to play if there's limitations. Basically, I can't go out there and give you my everything if there's limitations. So there are no limitations. I can go out there and steal bases. I could dive. I could do whatever I need to do. Yeah, it's scary as hell because we put a lot of money into this guy and lost him in, what was it, May?
You know, yeah.
It was basically Mother's Day. Yeah, it was
May. It sucked.
Yeah.
Well, we wanted to see him, and then he was done. He was the one, you know, we were talking about who's the signature guy, and he was the signature guy because we hadn't re-signed Chapman, and right. Ramos hadn't really come up yet. And so he was the guy and all eyes on him. And we're like, yes, this is excitement. This is something we can look forward to. And then he's just gone.
And you're learning an entire new league. And that's the whole thing. You've got a 6-year deal. So now you're a year behind again, because you almost have to feel like those couple of months were wiped out. Mm-hmm. Because any kind of progress that you made just kind of goes backwards, because now again you're facing, like, you open in Cincinnati. He didn't play in Cincinnati last year. He didn't play against the Reds last year. So or did he? Actually, you know what? The game he got, I apologize. The game he got hurt, I think, was actually against the Reds, but it was at home.
It was at home.
But, you know, so basically facing different pitchers and going from there. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you have a good point, because if you've got a guy who's going to steal 50 or 60 bags, you're going to bat him leadoff most likely. Mm-hmm. And then you can kind of play around with stuff, because from there you can go Jung-Hoo Lee, And then second, you can go Adamas. Then you can go third, Lamont Wade Jr. I know he doesn't have the power, but he gets on base. So now I think they're looking to extend innings. So any combination of those three guys at the top, and then Chapman and Ramos, I mean, you're extending the inning, you're getting your power guys, and Chapman is no slouch on the bases either.
Yeah.
I mean, he's pretty damn quick. He's not a base stealer, but he is fast and he is opportunistic. The exact opposite of Wilmer Flores. Right. So you got to get Wilmer Flores as far away as possible from Matt Chapman. So Matt Chapman has, you know, clean in front of him to get some bags. And Adamas stole 21 bags last year, which
would that have led the team?
No, I think Fitzgerald had 24.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure he had more than 21. But yeah, that's a guy. I mean, you know, when you said we're doing this today, I was like, I'm not going to take him because I had a feeling you were going to take him.
Mm-hmm.
And we were going to talk about him at some point because, I mean, when you're coming into the spring after a massive loss season like that for a guy that everybody is so excited about, I mean, they're giving away on Saturdays in the bleachers, right? Jung Hoo crew t-shirts.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's pretty dope. So that, I mean, when even management, everybody's excited about the guy.
Yeah.
So yeah.
If he plays, he doesn't even have to be one of the greatest. He doesn't even have to be one of the top 25 best players. If he plays hard and he has some success, he's going to be a giant star in this area.
Absolutely. And you know what? He had some really good hard hit numbers the last 3 or 4 weeks before he got hurt. The hard hit numbers were starting to just skyrocket. So he was starting to barrel the ball. So to get, you know, 500, 600 at bats out of him this season, I'm really excited to see what we get.
Men, if you've lost your hair, it doesn't mean you can't find it again. Try Hims Hair Loss Solutions and you'll be joining hundreds of thousands of subscribers who found their hair again. It can be hard for men to deal with hair loss, even though it is common. Luckily, I'm here to provide you with a solution so you don't even have to talk about it. Through Hims, you can restore your hair by accessing their personalized hair loss solutions. Men value many different things about their appearance, but if you're a guy who really cares about your hair and find that it's slowly going away, you might be feeling discouraged when you look in the mirror. And that's where Hims comes in. Check out their personalized hair loss solutions, and you can start seeing your hair grow back in as little as 3 to 6 months. Hims provides you with convenient access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple with doctor-trusted options and clinically proven ingredients, like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. Choose from personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatments to find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online, so there are no uncomfortable doctor visits. Answer a few questions, and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. No insurance is needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, and they can help you get your confidence back too with visibly thicker and fuller hair. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Results may vary based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
Your old or broken phone can let you down, but at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence with a new line on my plan and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. After all, you don't want your old phone to die on you when you're lost.
Perfect.
Or for your broken phone to glitch at the worst possible time.
Hey, can I get your number?
Oh. Trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad.
Taxes was taxing. Now taxes is relaxing when you file for free.
I can file for free?
TurboTax Free Edition, roughly 37% of filers qualify. Simple form 1040 returns only. See if you qualify at TurboTax.com/free. I can file for free.
Now this is taxes. File for free with TurboTax Free Edition and get your maximum refund. No schedules except for earned income tax credit, child tax credit, and student loan interest. See if you qualify at TurboTax.com/free.
All right, who's on your list?
I've already talked about him a little bit, but Lamont Wade Jr. And the reason I've got him as my, let's see what we've got type of guy. There's so many question marks around Lamont Wade Jr. I mean, the way we talked about him, it's like we made it sound like he's entrenched as your leadoff hitter going forward. But there's so many.
I think it's his most important spring.
Absolutely. Because
as far as the rest of his career is concerned,
100%. He's 31 years old, so he's going to play the season as 31. Final year, he's an unrestricted free agent next year. He's only making $5 million this year. That was a reason to obviously go to arbitration, keep the guy around. Because if you need a placeholder for Eldridge, that's not a bad guy to have for $5 million. And the reason he's not a bad guy to have for $5 million is because in 2023, he had a 2.7 war. In 2024, he had a 2.1 war. Pete Alonso last year had a 2.6 war. And he's making $30 million this year. Yes, I know Pete Alonso can hit 40 home runs. Lamont Wade Jr. cannot. But the fact that their war is that close, and it shows you how important they are at that position, to get Lamont Wade Jr. for $5 million versus $30 million. Because if you look at free agency this past offseason, teams were putting out $8 million per war is what they were given in free agency dollars. And so Lamont Wade Jr. in that sense would be worth about $17 million when you look at it. So $5 million, that's a deal. Apparently has strong legs going into this season. Worked a lot in the offseason on his legs. But there's mention of him possibly playing in the outfield. I wouldn't expect that Lamont Wade Jr. would get more than like 4 games in the outfield by the time the end of July rolls around at that point. And again, we talked about the possibility of batting leadoff. The biggest thing with Lamont Wade Jr., he could be a cog early in the games, big time. The big thing with Lamont Wade Jr. is, and the question mark is he going to be on this roster when September 1st rolls around? When July 31st rolls around, really, the trade deadline. Can the Giants offload him for, a hard-throwing rookie ball player, low-A ball pitcher, if Eldridge is tearing it up and ends up coming up? Because at that point, you've got Wade, you've got Eldridge, and you've got Wilmer Flores on the roster. You got 3 first basemen. Mm-hmm. And Eldridge is not going to be your DH. I mean, you're going to bring him up to play first base. So Lamont Wade Jr. could be a DH. Wilmer can be a DH. Get those guys both off of their feet, which would be the way to go. So that's a guy I'm really watching this spring to see what he does. Obviously make sure he stays healthy. So I'm sure they're not going to, push him too much in the spring, and they're going to have him ready for when the season starts.
Yeah. If they get a good year out of Lamont Wade, it's going to be such a bonus for the offense, for one. But for two, it's going to be good for him, because being a free agent now, I don't think he's ever going to make that like 5-year deal that all of these guys, play for. But he could be a valuable left-handed hitter. And probably this kind of organization might be the worst kind of organization for him now. If Buster's plans come into fruition, he's probably more valuable in a heavier analytics lefty-righty organization, which is why he was traded for, because of what they were doing. Like, Farhan saw his value. And so I would imagine he's probably not going to be back with us next year. He's going to be, there's going to be an organization that sees something for him in a specific role. And the best case scenario for him is he goes out there and kills it and has one of his best years, which that, I mean, we all hope that for him, because that'll mean that our team is better too. So
yeah, for sure.
Okay. My next person here, and oh man, we've been talking about this kid for a long time now. This is not put up or shut up for Marco Luciano, but he is, for such a young player, it does seem that he is at a little bit of a fork in the road in a sense, because he was going to be the shortstop of the future. Keith Law was telling us he's probably not good enough defensively. You may need to move him to third or the outfield. And this was like 2 or 3 years ago. And finally, the Giants were like, okay, he's not going to be a good enough shortstop. And now we need to move him to the outfield. And it doesn't sound like he is super happy about it, but he understands that his value might be I take that back. His value is definitely higher as a shortstop. So that is probably why he's not super happy, but he knows in order to get on the big league field for 2025 that he's going to have to move to the outfield, because they do not see him as an infielder, and they just went out and spent the most amount of money they've ever spent on a free agent on their shortstop, who's going to be here for several years. So effectively knocking Luciano out of that position. I don't know what his trade value is today. I don't imagine it is half of what it used to be. And so if you're him, the only thing you can do is just hit the hell out of the baseball and let the baseball piece take over the conversation of who he really is. Because there was so much built up around him about this guy's going to be the future, that he has effectively been a disappointment, and he hasn't even really had a chance to play. Like, that's how unfair this whole thing can be. Is he's a disappointment to the fans, and he has not even played a full year in the big leagues yet. So think about that pressure. Now, my hope for him is that he just goes out and he hits the ball hard and he runs hard and he plays hard and he stays injury free. And he kind of lets that speak for him, because I would root for any young player who's had to deal with what he's dealt with. And I would love to see him come into his own and to be able to say, look, you know, I was so highly touted and here is why. And when he puts bat on the ball, that ball still jumps. He just has to put the barrel on the ball more consistently. You have guys like Adamas and Chapman. You have Buster Posey on the side. You have Pat Burrell. Look, Pat Burrell could probably have the best conversation with Marco Luciano over anybody. Pat Burrell's the number one draft pick in all of in the amateur draft, and had super high expectations and had a solid career, but never lived up to that status. And so it might be a good opportunity for the Giants to, you know, let this guy hang out in AAA for most of the year. And then when he's ready, give him some at bats. Like, I'm not projecting, but let's say they're out of the playoff race in August. What better than to give this dude 2 months of ABs? You know, he and Ramos and Lee, and you know, you sort of figure out the positioning. It could just be at DH as well. Don't worry about defense. Just friggin' hit. That's your job. And I would love to see what he could make out of it, because I mean, the guy walks out on the baseball field, and you're like, who's that dude?
Yeah.
Like that. He looks like a player, man. He's probably the best player on the team. Like that's what it looks like. So I hope that that's what eventually happens for his sake.
Yeah. I'm with you. It's so hard to make of what we should expect in the spring out of him, because again, how many at bats is he going to get in the spring? I hope a lot, but again, if he makes the team, here's the thing. If he makes the team as an outfielder, where does he play? So he's got to play. He's got to start in AAA, right? Especially because he hasn't had a whole lot of actual, you know, AAA experience in the outfield. And that's the thing. It's all in, you know, winter leagues. So to get him out there in AAA, he's going to start in AAA. He's not going to make the club. So let's temper everybody's expectations. He's not going to make the club unless something just... So, I mean, you're talking injuries and he hits 400 and he's, you know, playing great outfield and somebody gets hurt in the outfield for the Giants and you know, the major league club and he's got to come up. But again, you'll have Luis Matos, you have Gerard Encarnacion. You're going to use one of those guys because you've seen what Luis Matos can do in the outfield. You also have seen flashes of what he can do at the plate. We haven't seen those flashes yet from Luciano. And it is frustrating. I mean, where's the blame? I mean, do we have to blame anybody? I don't know. Where's the blame though? If we do, is it management from last year? Is it, you know, him for just not hitting? Just, you know, like you like to say, did he get the tight butt cheeks when he came up? I mean, what, you know, what happened? You know, what happened last year? And what does he have? 126 plate appearances in the majors. 45 strikeouts and 115 official at bats, 11 walks, OPS of 590. I mean, these are just no home runs. These are ugly numbers. And we heard last year, like, oh, Luciano is going to come up and we're going to let him just play.
He was the starting shortstop at the beginning of spring training last year.
Yeah, they did that. I mean, what did 2-3 times last year they did that? And it was just false start each time. We go, oh, good, because we're out of it. So just let the guy play. And then what is it, 5-6 games into the let him play and he's back down. He's either on the bench and then getting pushed down to the minors. And so it was really, really hard to watch last year. And you really felt for the guy. And he even said it himself. I felt lost at the plate. I mean, he said that in an interview over the last couple of weeks. I felt lost at the plate. So he was failed. But also, you know, needs to pick it up himself. I mean, he's a major league hitter.
Yeah.
He was drafted high. He's got it. I'm not drafted high, but he was, you know, the
bonus baby, man.
Bonus baby, the international draft. So he was given a lot of money and because of his hitting skills, and he showed what he could do coming up through the minors as well in flashes. So it was also up to him to do that. But again, I think now, unfortunately, years later, the Giants have a plan for him. And that's to be an outfielder. Things are going to have to happen for him to be up in the majors playing the outfield. And again, I hope they happen, you know, positive wise for the Giants. Yeah. I hope it's not because of an injury. I hope it's because he forces the Giants to trade Yaz, or he forces the Giants to, you know, move Ramos to DH and now your left fielder is Luciano because he plays a great left field and he's, you know, he has a 900 OPS in AAA. So, but, you know, I don't know. So many question marks. But again, another fun thing to watch in the spring.
Yeah.
So that's the thing. We have a lot of fun things to watch
when he steps up to the plate. Like, you're going to want to watch. You're going to see what he does.
You always do. We stopped every time. Last year he'd come up. I don't care. I mean, he was in the throes of an 0-for-12 with 6 Ks. I'm like, he could catch one and punch it out of that ballpark. So we watched, you know. So
all right, who else?
I you know, another one I want to watch, and I like what he said at the San Jose stop for the fan fest, Landon Roop. He was being interviewed by it was a couple of dudes who I guess they have a YouTube channel. I don't know. I'm searching Landon Roop quotes because you know, I know he's going to be fighting for a spot. He said just a month ago, I want to be a starter. My job is to go out there this spring and fight for a spot in the starting rotation.
Yeah.
Last year was the first year he ever came out of the bullpen. He said it was weird. It was different. He didn't mind it. He said at times he actually liked it because before you have a start, you're in your head and you're thinking about it quite a bit. But when you're called out of the bullpen, you just get up, throw, you go out there and you get your outs. That's what you do. So when you look at the Giants rotation right now, it's Webb, Verlander, Ray, and then Jordan Hicks, who we've heard about, you know, 15 pounds of muscle, Jordan Schwarzenegger, Hicks coming to the Giants this year. So he's your number four guy. So then number five, you've got Kyle Harrison, Landon Roop. I'm going to say Kyle Harrison has the upper hand. And then you got Landon Roop, and then you got Carson Wisenhunt. So you got three guys that are fighting for that number five spot. All of them have options. So you don't have to say, well, this guy is the front runner. Even though Kyle Harrison has the track record from last year, but he fell off, he tailed off. Kyle Harrison is going to be, you're going to talk about him a little bit, but he's,
yes, you know,
dropping his arm slot a little bit and try to get a little bit more deception. Having Verlander in camp, though, I'm sure is massive for all these guys. Roop said, hey, I was a gigantic Verlander fan growing up. He said, so the first thing I did is I went up to him and told him, hey, I got a selfie with you. When he was in Detroit,
mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure where they traveled to, but either way, he got a selfie with him. So I think it's pretty fun to watch, Landon Roop in the spring and see what kind of numbers he could put up. I mean, that curveball, it's almost an 80 mile an hour curveball, mm-hmm. It's like 77, 78, and it is dirty. I mean, we saw it so much last year. In September, he had quite a few five-inning starts, four or five strikeouts, a couple of walks, still a little bit, you know, a little bit problem with the control. But I want to see him fight for that number five spot. I think I even said, you know, a couple podcasts ago that I would not, just don't be shocked if coming out of spring, your number five starter is Landon Roop. So definitely going to be watching him.
He's only 26.
Yeah. I mean, and it's a good problem to have, because if he beats out Harrison and Wisenhunt and both of those guys, what's that?
And Birdsong.
And Birdsong. I meant to say Birdsong instead of Wisenhunt, because Birdsong really has that upper hand over Wisenhunt.
Yeah, Wisenhunt didn't necessarily have the best year last year.
Yeah. He'll start in AAA. So you've got those three guys fighting for that number five spot. But whoever beats it out, the other two guys are going to be in AAA. Or, you know, Landon Roop's going to be your middle reliever along with, Jelly. So it's not a bad problem to have when you've got basically seven starters.
You want to be a starting pitcher versus a middle reliever. Because the difference in the value of your contract is ridiculous.
Yes.
Like if you can actually start, you know, 30 games a year and just be decent, your value is like 15 to 20 million a year. And as a long reliever, it's half or less than half. So,
yeah. And with starting pitching, you know, it's not so much with hitting. With hitting, you're almost paying for the future. I mean, when you're giving Willy Adames money, you're giving him money to hit 30 home runs, 30 home runs, 30 home runs, 30 home runs. With starting pitching, you're paying for the past and really, really, really hoping that past is the same as, you know, the future. So I think that's why that's why you want to be a starting pitcher, because if you're a mid reliever and you're like, hey, sign me up to be a closer. Well, we've never seen that. I don't know if you could do that. We don't know if you have the intestinal fortitude to take that on. So, yeah.
I did want to talk about Harrison real quick. And if you have another one, we could go three for you as well.
Those are the two I have, because I have limited brain capacity to be able to watch enough guys.
I mean, you mentioned Hicks. He's also somebody that I think fans will watch closely. Birdsong as well. He's someone you want to see, because I think he's got a lot of upside. And he actually showed a little bit of, like, you're like, oh, like he threw some stuff You know, and it was unexpected. So it's a kind of cool. I mean, Camilo Duval, I don't think we'll see much from him in spring, though. Right. Early on in the season, I think you're going to kind of keep an eye on him, whether it's him or Walker in the closer role and how they dance around that whole delicate situation. But I think it's Kyle Harrison, because this guy is still so young, and he had his first full season in the bigs, dealt with, losing velocity on the fastball, dealt with a shoulder injury towards the end of his run. They had to kind of give him some time off because he wasn't doing well. But at the same time, just the idea that this dude takes the ball and just starts, you know, throwing fastballs at big league hitters and, you know, getting them to swing and miss. And the problem is really just he's erratic. Like he doesn't spot the fastball very well. If he gets his velocity back, which we've heard at least early on is back to the mid 90s, whereas last year it was more low 90s, then he's got a chance, because at 95 and from his arm angle, he doesn't have to be as precise. At 91, 92, you kind of got to be precise. You're not fooling anybody.
Yeah.
So I'm really looking to see what his fastball looks like. He seems to me, and I like to compare guys to who we've seen, but, you know, maybe try and be fair with it, but not Lincecum is different, because Lincecum was just like a whirlwind. Like, it was just like, oh my gosh, we are so lucky to have this guy. But later Lincecum, when he did lose his stuff, you just saw this dude battling and battling and battling. Yeah. And you just kind of felt bad, because you're like, I remember when this dude was like dominating these same guys. But Harrison, he has like the Lincecum, when Lincecum was going great, he didn't have to throw pitches anywhere near the strike zone because the hitters are just guessing anyways. And Harrison could do that if his velocity is up. But as he loses velocity, he's got to be more pinpoint. And that will, he's not at that level yet. And he may never be at that level. So I think the fastball velocity is going to be key. He's not like Bumgarner could pitch without the velocity, because who had better control than Madison Bumgarner? Like, Bumgarner knew where that thing was going every time it left his hand. And so we'll see what kind of pitcher Harrison becomes. Because if we see him lose velocity again, then he's got to be more pinpoint. And I'm just not sure that he's going to be that guy. But who knows? Maybe he's so young that he could develop in a couple of different ways. So I'm more so looking at A, velocity, and B, control with him, because he's such a dynamic arm and he's so young. And I think some fans last year saw him and were like, is that it? I thought we had a guy. That's right. Really Kyle? And it's like, no. You know, he's got to figure this thing out, and we got to give him some space to do that. And hopefully this is his year to where you start to see some signs of, oh, that's what it looks like, you know, when these hitters are like, where the hell is this ball coming from? So he would be my other guy. And that's just, you always look for guys like that who have this like funky deliveries or funky releases and their ability to spin the ball. He does probably need a breaking pitch, though, that is, you know, better than average, because I was reading something, I think it was Grant Brisby wrote that most of his stuff was like at the bottom of the list on like that stuff plus ranking. So outside of the fastball, obviously. So that was it.
I think the hard part with him that I look at is that he does live with that high fastball, that deceptive high four seam fastball. The problem last year is he missed with it. If you're missing over the plate with a four seam fastball, it's not deceptive anymore, and guys are going to crush it. So he did give up a lot of home runs, and it was a bit frustrating to watch at times. I mean, that game against the Dodgers, like, it was really early in the season. And he gave up a couple of home runs, and he had that game in the bag. He was owning the Dodgers lineup, but just kept giving up, especially to Shohei, I think it was. Does it worry you? And I mean, it probably doesn't worry us because it doesn't worry management that he's changing his arm slot a little bit lower to get more deception on pitches like that. I mean, I guess my concern would be, is it going to be a problem for injuries? But again, if management doesn't think so, I mean, these guys, you know, they have millions of dollars invested in these guys and they're not worried about it. So,
yeah, no. And it, you know, it might be just like he watched Chris Sale in his third, you know, mid 30s or whatever, and goes, huh, like he's still able to do it. And, you know, let me mimic that a little bit. Who knows? I mean, you know, guys like to change things early in the year and then it doesn't work and they go back to the way that they normally did it. So,
yeah.
All right. Last thing before we get out of here, I read an article, and, you know, shout out to the Chronicle. They're just the Athletic too, but to have the Chronicle and the Athletic and all the baseball writers, it's been awesome reading all the content. We're going to see robot umps in 11 games this year in spring. That is insane. I didn't know that it was so close for us to already be seeing big leaguers. And, you know, the thing that some of the players, you know, like, of course, Patrick Bailey, because he is such a dynamo with the framing, you can't really trick the robo ump as easy as you can trick the real umpire. So he's obviously down on it. And some of the other players are like, yeah, it's not the best because some of the stuff that we do is like deception and, you know, now I guess the idea is like you can have two challenges.
Yeah.
And for the catcher, like the pitcher can't actually have any, like the pitcher can't challenge. It has to be the catcher, and they can't have any communication from the dugout as to, you know, like in the NBA, there's a play or there's a foul call and immediately somebody's on an iPad watching a replay and the coach looks at it and goes, should we challenge? Yes, no. And it's like the split decision and they go, nah, probably not. And they go, okay, we're not going to challenge.
Yeah. And just like with plays at second base, you go to your replay assistant. He tells you, you know, hey, you know, hang on a second. We're looking at this. And yeah, with this, it's just, and so I've seen quite a few games in Reno here, Aces Ballpark, and it's AAA. And it's, they have the three challenges. I loved it. Pitch right on the corner. Ump calls it a ball. Catcher just goes like this, taps his head a couple times. And then umpire looks back up at the booth and says, okay, yeah, that is a strike. So it's fast. It's quick. You don't even notice it's happening sometimes. And so I'm excited for it. I want them to work this into the game. I want them to have three challenges going forward once the regular season starts and they do finally implement this, because you could have three challenges. And if you're right every time, you never lose those challenges. They just don't go away, which is awesome.
So I started to see what some of the players were already thinking about when it came to the ABS system. And they said the gamesmanship aspect of it is to kind of deke the other team into a challenge that is absolutely wrong.
How would you do that? How I don't.
So I think, like, if I'm thinking about this, so Patrick Bailey, Logan Webb would have to get something. Actually, I don't know exactly, but it's Patrick Bailey was saying something. So I thought it would be in the catcher doing something to make the other team call for a challenge. And then,
okay,
you know, maybe it's the opposite of framing, right? Maybe it's like unframing. So instead of taking the ball in the strike zone, you kind of take it out of the strike zone and you kind of trick the other team into challenging something. I don't know. It'll be interesting. But the other,
because it does have to be a split decision. I mean, it's got to be, you've got to do it immediately.
The other thing they said was how the cheating that would happen with you know, they talked with like the garbage can banging means bang the garbage can lid once means challenge it from the dugout. Yeah, yeah. So, you know, there will be another aspect of gamesmanship in. But, yeah, I'm interested to see how that works in spring training. You know, we're talking about the players we want to see. I'm actually interested to see how this, if this enhances or not, because the thing about the NBA, I think the way that they do the challenge in the NBA, like it actively hurts the game. In some instances for television, it creates some drama, but like it hurts the flow of the play a lot. Like the game just stops and you're sitting there for like
forever.
7 minutes to see. Baseball's is not as bad. I think that I think it's generally okay because they do it a little bit faster and they have New York on top of it. But yeah, I'm interested to see how this, you know, baseball put in a few things over the last few years, and I think they've mostly been a plus. The only one that we don't really like is that three batter rule, but the you know the other stuff is speeding up the game has been positive. So I'm interested to see how this works as well.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, so we're back. I think we're mostly, I won't promise weekly, but with spring training there'll be more things to talk about. You know, we're generally week to week from here, but you know, there might be some opportunities for nothing going on. I know there's some vacation for Brad coming up as well that we may change up our schedule a little bit.
Got to go to Disneyland and get my churro on.
Exactly. So for the most part, I think we'll be weekly, but there may be some weeks where we skip out. If you listen to some of the other shows, I try and keep the schedules on other shows. Because Brian and I recorded yesterday, so that is our death lineup for the week. Because the NBA doesn't even get back into the swing of things until this weekend, and no current We Want Winners with Rod and I. Though once the draft stuff starts getting a little bit more heated, we will come back with more draft talk. Because that's the 49ers' big thing right now. It's like, what are we going to do with this 11th pick? And you know, are they going to trade up? Or are they going to go linemen, whatever it is. But yeah, so that is it from here. For Brad, I am Double G. We will see you when we see you. Peace out.
Peace.
What is Dax, are you
tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for
in Dax's domain. We see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell. Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. Instead, go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI and a watch and tab on any plan. Only on Verizon.
With new line on my plan. Service plan required for watch and tab. Additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.